a gun in the face.
Then all of a sudden, they all kind of lined up. They pointed their guns at me. And this is the point where I thought, I'm going to die today.
Started 2 years of horror for an American in Venezuela.
They said, you need to give us your phone and get ready because you're coming with us.
I'm Becky Bruce, and I spent a year researching and piecing together Josh and Tammy Holt's story about their ordeal in a notorious prison.
That's when everything started to turn bad. We had another pound on the door. Boom, boom, boom. And there was the police once again.
You can binge all of the episodes of Hope and Darkness on KSLPodcasts.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
This hour, it's Let Me Speak to the Governor. Governor Spencer Cox answers questions from KSL and from you. Call now 801-575-8255. Let Me Speak to the Governor, live from the studios of KSL News Radio 102.7 FM and 1160 AM.
And good afternoon. Thank you for joining us for Let Me Speak to the Governor. I'm Maria Chalaos. I'm with Utah Governor Spencer Cox this afternoon. And Governor, thank you so much for being with us today and taking all of our listeners' calls and questions.
Maria, it's great to be back with you again.
It is such a great day. This is the first day I have been able to see the faces of many of my coworkers because our company said, hey, those of you who are vaccinated, hey, you can drop the mask. And it's just an incredible feeling.
Well, it is an incredible feeling. We're wired for connection, and so much of that connection has been missing with distancing, and then even when we are together with masks on. And so being able to connect again is a cool thing, and because you're fully vaccinated, you can do that and do that safely. And we're so excited with what KSL is doing with the walk-in vaccine clinic at the Megaplex location in West Valley today. That's a huge deal.
It really is a huge deal because, really, we looked at our cases from yesterday. We had 430 new cases of COVID. This isn't over yet.
It's not over, but it's getting closer to being over because of vaccines. As vaccines go up, case numbers go down. I didn't say this in my press conference this morning, but we got our new numbers right after the press conference was over, and we had a huge decrease versus this day last week. This is the first time we've had a rolling 7-day average under 300 cases since May of last year. And so to be under 300, that's kind of a benchmark we've been watching for a while. I think we're at about 292 or 293, right around there today, and so we were really excited about that. But again, it's because more and more people are getting vaccinated every day. And I do have to give just a shout out if you're in the West Valley area, or you're headed that way from 8 to 9 today. You can go there to Larry H. Miller Megaplex. You guys are there. Real Salt Lake is going to be there. Leo the Lion, ages 12 and up. They have both Pfizer and J&J, and I think they're giving away popcorn as well
they
if you
are.
Show up.
They
so
definitely
it's
are.
It's worth it for the popcorn.
Boyd
no
Matheson
appointment
will
required.
Be there right at 1 o'clock, so you can see
Very
Boyd
cool.
Matheson as well. So, Governor, masks have been just such a controversial issue, just kind of crazy. And the legislature did pass a law, a bill yesterday, won't become law until you sign it, saying, hey, public schools can no longer require masks. How do you feel about that, and will you sign it?
Yeah, I will. It's something that I support, something that we've talked about for a while. And there's a few reasons why. If you look at the age distribution of the coronavirus, over the age of 12 and especially over the age of 14, those young people tend to spread the virus more like adults. And certainly we've seen more hospitalizations with that age group than we would in a normal flu season, although, again, much lower than the elderly population. We have vaccines now available for those 12 and up. My 14-year-old daughter was able to get her vaccine last year. We're talking about the fall. So as kids come back into school in the fall, with younger kids, especially in elementary school, if you start to look at the data around those kids, it does look more like the flu or less than the flu. We don't have nearly as many hospitalizations. We've had almost no fatalities in that age group. And there is this connection piece that you just talked about that is really important for the development of especially young kids. And the CDC has mentioned this all along, by the way. If you look at their recommendations around elementary schools, they were different than their recommendations. They did recommend masks. They absolutely did. But they also had more exceptions sections in there for child development and for understanding how important it is for kids to see faces, for speech development. Especially, my wife has a degree in early childhood, a special ed degree, and we've talked to some special educators around speech development and some of the problems that they've been having around that. And so it just makes sense as the virus continues to go down. Now, if something changes, if we have a variant that impacts young people, we can make a change to that. We still have emergency authorization that we can do for 30 days, and then we would need to bring the legislature back to make a change there. And they've said all along they're willing to make a change if one is necessary. But we're going to continue on this path we're going now, and we feel really good about the fall.
Utah legislature met in special session yesterday to talk about monies that have been appropriated from the federal government. Tell us your reaction, how you feel about how that all went.
Yeah, we feel really good about that piece. We've been working closely with them. Of course, we have the ARPA money, the America Rescue Plan money that's coming to the state. It's a tremendous amount of money. I've said all along, I think it's too much money. I think there were some mistakes there. I think we've started to see inflation at rates that we haven't seen over the past couple decades. And so we're concerned there. And what the legislature did and what we asked them to do is to be very responsible with that funding, to use it, of course, where we need it for our pandemic response and some of the monies that have been expended, and then to invest that. If we're going to be borrowing from future generations, then we need to be investing that money in ways that will benefit future generations. And so we're looking at infrastructure needs and how we can improve infrastructure. So, you know, broadband infrastructure is one area where we're going to continue to invest. Just making sure that we're spending it in a way that will pay dividends for years to come. And by the way, local governments will be getting some funds, and as will local school districts. And we want to partner with those locals to make our dollars go even further. So some of these generational projects that are important to them, and we're not spending it all right now. We're being very cautious. We actually don't have all of the rules yet on how it can be spent, and those rules we anticipate will be changing from the Treasury Department. And so we just want to be really responsible. Utah does that. We've been recognized. The ALEC, which is a legislative group, a national group, recognized Utah for the 14th year in a row as the state with the best economic outlook, and it's because we're very careful with the way we spend taxpayer dollars.
Utah lawmakers do something that rarely happens. They called an extraordinary session to talk about something completely unrelated, critical race theory. What is your reaction to what happened with that?
Well, so I actually wrote a lengthy letter. I would encourage all Utahns to read that letter about this topic and about special sessions and the way we use them. What I appreciate is that they took my advice. This is a very divisive topic, and there's a lot of lack of understanding, lack of definitions. If you talk to 50 people about what critical race theory is, you'll get 50 different answers. I've been very upfront and clear that I don't believe that critical race theory should be taught in Utah's K-12 schools, and it is not being taught in Utah's K-12 schools. It is not part of the curriculum. But what I've said is the state school board has a role under the Constitution of our state to work on this issue and on these issues related to education, and that's exactly what the legislature did yesterday. It was a recommendation to the state school board. I met with Superintendent Dixon as well as Chair Huntsman, and they are working on this. They're working with our local school districts. They're working with our multicultural community, working to make sure that we get this right, whatever that right looks like. It is something that I think is very nuanced, and it's going to take all of us working together to do it the Utah way and the right way. And so we're headed in a great situation. They're investigating any time there are reports that critical race theory is being taught in schools. They're looking into that, and they had reported back to me that they had not found any yet.
Right. Was this an appropriate venue for that? The criticism from the other side, if you want to call it that, has been like, well, this wasn't really an appropriate time to take up such an important topic. Why not wait till the general session? Why do that? Why call this special, rare type of session?
Sure. So I made that case in the in my letter, and I issued the call, right? And that was not included on the call. And my argument was that we did need more time to work on this. We did need to bring more people in, and we needed to give the state school board an opportunity to work through this as well. And so that's actually what happened. Now, they did talk about it, but they didn't pass a bill, right? They didn't do any legislation around it. And in fact, I would encourage people, because I know there's so much outrage on this on both sides of the issue, to actually go read what it was they did. It's not controversial what they recommended, and so I do think it's okay. They are an independent branch of government, and so it's awesome that we have these places to have the conversation. I would also encourage people to go to the legislature's website, le.utah.gov, and you can actually go and listen. In the Senate, they had some really robust debate. That's what's missing in so much of this argument is thoughtful debate. Even some of the people that voted for the resolution, I think if you go and listen to them, they're very persuasive in their arguments about how we can do this better, how we can actually have debate. This is one of the last places where two people of different parties actually get into the same room and talk about difficult issues. And we need more of that, not less of it. And so I don't have a problem with them having that conversation and understanding that there's more work to do. And I anticipate that we'll see that work over the next few months, and we'll have something ready in January.
Governor, the questions are coming in. The callers are starting to line up. We're going to take a break and come back with their questions up next. The number to call, 801-575-8255. And you can text us at 57500.
Two years ago, Americans watched in horror as a crisis unfolded at the Kabul airport.
She was tear-gassed and beaten.
Images of thousands desperate to escape Taliban oppression filled our news feeds. More than 80,000 Afghans made it to America. But the story didn't end there.
It was very cold. There was no power, no heat.
Who would help our newest neighbors? I'm Andrea Smartin. In Stranger Becomes Neighbor, you'll hear the stories of some remarkable refugees who left their homes and their dreams behind, only to start over from zero.
Their only possession was three blankets.
And you'll meet Americans who stepped up to help them.
You want me to come when you deliver your baby.
What can one person do in the face of an international disaster decades in the making? That's Stranger Becomes Neighbor. Find us at kslpodcast.com. Follow us on Apple Podcasts or anywhere else you listen.
Today, one of the things that was kind of important to me, and one of the ideas I like behind doing a drawing of some sort is that everyone would be qualified for that incentive instead of just the people who held out to the very end. And so we'll look at it. I would love to not have to do any type of incentives. I would much rather that everyone take responsibility to protect themselves and to protect others and to go and get the vaccine. I'm grateful. So many have done that. Our numbers are incredible, by the way. We're now we're at 90% for those over the age of 70 who have gotten a vaccine. I think we're at 88% if you go everyone over the age of 65. We're continuing. We're well over 50% of close to 60% of those 16 and older who have gotten at least one dose of the vaccine. We're pushing towards that 70% goal by July 4th. And we just need more and more. So we'll see what happens if things slow down and we feel like we need to. There are some people that are kind of on the fence, and there's something we could do to help incentivize them to get there. We'll look at that. But, yeah, there are definitely some limits on what we would do, James. Thank you for the question.
Thank you, James, for your call. Governor, our first texter wants to know, they're changing the subject altogether. Well, they want to know why we're still on daylight saving time.
Ah, that's a great question. And I know, especially as parents, our kids are a little older now, but with younger kids, that was the worst. The time changes every year. There has been a lot of debate about what we would do and if we change, what we would change to. Most people, if you survey, and I'm one of those, would prefer to stay on the time where we are now, where you have more light in the evenings. And so we would spring forward and then just stay there. That seems to be the choice of most voters and most people who are polled. We can't make that change as a state. In order to do that, it would have to be a congressional action. We could go the other way and pull back, but we do have there is a push now, a national push, and Congress has been looking at this. I know that Rob Bishop was working on this before. I know Marco Rubio was involved in this as well. As more and more states come together, we actually had some legislation here in this state around that. If more states do it and come together, then we can make that change. I suspect that we may actually see it happen over the next 5 years at the national level, where changes are made and we're allowed to make those changes. So if you're interested in that, I would contact your member of Congress and. Hopefully we can get to a point where we're not doing the spring forward and fall back twice every year.
Right. Definitely inconvenient. Let's go back to our phone lines. We have Dwayne in Murray. Good afternoon, Dwayne. What is your question?
Hi. How are you doing?
Doing very well. Thanks.
Good. Hey, I have a question for the governor. A couple of weeks ago, I stopped at a stoplight when one of the motorcycles that we have go down and split the lanes. And when doing so, he tagged my mirror. But by the time I realized what had happened, the light's green and he's long gone. So my question is wasn't this like a 2-year trial to see if this actually worked? And if not, how do we go about repealing that law?
Well, thank you, Dwayne, and I'm sorry to hear that happened. So what I would encourage you to do is talk to your legislator, and of course, you know, talk to your neighbors. There's certainly strength in numbers. There is a real safety message here, since we have interns during that 45-day session. It's intense. It's fascinating. It's a lot of work, but it's so much fun. As I talk to young people who have been able to do those internships, they absolutely love it. And we do. We take, you know, internships from SUU and Dixie State in the South, from BYU and the University of Utah and Weber State and of course my alma mater, Utah State University. We have those internships available. And so I would just encourage you as you head off to college, to contact the institute that handles the internships there and figure out what you need to do to qualify for those internships so you can start your freshman year to work towards making one of those happen.
And kudos to them for knowing at 16 that they want to be involved in government.
Yeah, I mean, at 16, I had no idea what I was doing with my life. That's really, really impressive.
Would have been helpful to know at that point in time.
Well, we both landed on our feet, Maria,
we did.
I think we're okay.
So far, so good. And the number to call with your questions, 801-575-8255. You can also text us your questions at 57500. David and Jared, your calls are coming up next, as well as Matt, who has a text question. And we'll be right back following the bottom of the hour news.
This hour, it's Let Me Speak to the Governor. Governor Spencer Cox answers questions from KSL. And from you, call now, 801-575-8255. Let Me Speak to the Governor, live from the studios of KSL News Radio, 102.7 FM and 1160 AM.
And good afternoon. Thank you for joining us for Let Me Speak to the Governor. I'm Maria Chaleos, along with Utah Governor Spencer Cox. And again, taking your calls, 801-575-8255. Back to our phone lines. David is in South Jordan. And David, what is your question for the governor?
Hey, Governor. I hope you and your family's doing well. So my question for you is, so you've probably seen Arkansas's trans bill that they passed last month. The bill did several things, but one of the things it did was ban the transgender, I guess, the transition surgery for minors. Would you be in favor or at least consider doing something like that here in Utah.
David, thank you, and thank you for the kind words. My family's doing very well. I appreciate that. So I did have the opportunity to talk to Governor Hutchinson down in Arkansas. This is an issue that may be coming to the legislature this year. We've done some research on this and found that those transition surgeries are extremely rare in the state of Utah, and most doctors, if not all, refuse to perform them except in the most extreme of circumstances. My concern, so I always get concerned, David, with any bill that tells families and doctors what they can and can't do in those relationships. And Governor Hutchinson, who is one of the most conservative Republicans in the country, he actually vetoed that bill. I believe it was overridden, but he called it a vast government overreach. And the reason I get worried about that is that, on the flip side of this is, you know, kind of mandating vaccines or requiring vaccines, which we're not doing. But when it comes to medical decisions that families make with their doctors, I'm always very wary. So we'll look at it. We'll look at the proposed legislation. If it comes, we'll see what that looks like. We'll do more research to find out what's happening in the state of Utah. Again, if it's not happening at all, then banning it probably isn't a big issue. But I am worried when government tells families and doctors what to do. Just because it's something that I don't like or that you don't like right now, it may be somebody else making those decisions later. And so I, as a conservative, I'm always very wary of those types of decisions that we make. But we'll certainly look at it, and we'll get all the information we can and make the best decision possible.
All right, David, thank you for your call. Governor Matt in Salt Lake City is interested in knowing what you believe that businesses can do, what role they play in fighting the drought.
Well, we need the help of everyone in this state. This is a tremendously difficult drought year. It was a bad winter and it was a bad spring, and we need rain desperately. Heading into one of the worst drought seasons that we've seen, and this is where we need the help of businesses all across the state. And that is to be very careful with the way that you use your water. Far too often, water wasting that happens on lawn strips where we end up watering parking stalls, and we need people to be very vigilant and take steps, any steps that you can take to reduce water usage in your business or on your farm. We've already cut back water usage on our farm. We just need everyone involved in this, businesses, individuals, and any type of organization that uses water.
Let's go back to our phone lines, and Jared is in North Ogden. Good afternoon, Jared. What is your question for the governor?
Good afternoon. Thank you for your leadership on rolling the vaccines out. I have both my doses. I'm happy. My question is on the anti-mask bill that was passed yesterday. While data have shown that those children don't get as sick as others who are older or in high-risk categories, the same data show that they transmit COVID to their teachers who may be in high-risk categories. And so what is the logic behind allowing that to happen?
Well, thank you for the question. Teachers, we were one of the few states that prioritized teachers and gave teachers the opportunity to get vaccinated before the rest of us for that very reason. And so not only have all teachers had the opportunity to be vaccinated, they've had it for much longer than the rest of us. So all teachers should be vaccinated by now. We encourage, if you're not vaccinated and you're teacher, please do so. And again, there's nothing that prevents people. I want to be very clear with this. There is nothing that prevents people from wearing masks and being cautious. And that includes teachers. Teachers who may feel like they're at high risk can certainly do that. Again, we will have had an opportunity for high school, all of our high school kids to get vaccinated by then, and many of our middle school kids now that ages 12 and up are uh, can, can get the vaccine. I'll just say, you know, we've been wearing masks in my family for a long time. I have a sister that is high risk. She has cystic fibrosis, and her lung function is very low, and so she will often wear a mask during the flu season, because if she gets the flu, it could be deadly for her, and we will encourage that. I suspect we will see people that continue to wear masks, and so there's no prohibition on wearing masks, just a prohibition on requiring that for everyone. And so we'll be moving into that personal responsibility phase of the pandemic, and we now have the tools and the options for everyone to keep themselves safe.
All right, Jared, thank you for your call. Next texter says, Governor, what's it going to take to improve our lane striping, such as the road reflectors that they have on the Arizona interstates?
Oh, well, whoever this texter is, thank them for this text. This is my favorite one of the day, because if I was not the governor, I would have been texting that to the governor and asking them to.
It does get pretty scary, especially in rainstorms.
Yeah, it does. So I have this is one of my priorities since I became governor. I'm like, hey, I can actually do something about this. And we've been meeting with the Department of Transportation, and they have been working diligently on this. So you mentioned Arizona, and it's easier to do in Arizona because you can stripe with the reflective striping and it stays for years and it works. Here in Utah, if we use that same technology, it gets taken off by snowplows every year. That's why it hasn't been done thus far. It's just really expensive. It means we would have to stripe the roads every spring as snow melts, and we would have to do it over and over again, which may be worth it. And that's one of the things we're looking at. It may still be worth it, but we actually have some scientists involved, we have some chemists involved that are working on some new technologies, some new paint that we could use that would be reflective and not peel off when snow plows go over it. And so this is a really high priority for us, and we're going to be getting some of that done soon, so look forward to an announcement to come.
And you travel a long way from here to your farm. So you are excited about it.
Yeah, no, I'm really excited for it. You know, for 8 years, I commuted 200 miles round trip every day. My family's still in San Pete, so they're still going to school, still finishing up, and so I'm still doing that. I'm spending two or three nights up here every week, and then back in Fairview, and doing a lot of meetings via Zoom, and still working from home. So I'm still making that drive, and it still worries me when it starts raining and all of a sudden the lines all disappear, and it's kind of a free-for-all.
No doubt about it. Okay, our next caller is Stephen in Holiday. Good afternoon, Stephen. What is your question?
Hi, I'm the guy that sent the text message about being 16 and being involved with government. I just have one more question. What is something, it's kind of the same question, it's a little bit different. What is something that a student can do right now to prepare themselves for a government role in the future? Like, it includes internship, maybe, like, what kind of scholarships or, like, degrees, anything just for, like, a high school kid like me that would be able to, who wants to become maybe a governor someday.
Sure, Stephen. Thank you. And I have to tell you, I didn't think I would become a governor someday, even when I was 55, let alone 16. So I love where your head is and that you're preparing for the future and whatever that is. One of the things I would highly recommend is to get involved with someone who's running for office. You know, pick someone, someone local, someone that you like, that you admire, that you would like to see get elected, and then volunteer on their campaign. Right now we're heading into campaign season for local government. This is an odd number year, which means that mayors and city council people and county commissioners will be running for office. That's where I got my first start, was volunteering on a local government campaign and going door to door and handing out flyers or making phone calls or sending emails. It's a great way to get to meet people and to kind of see if that's something that you're interested in, something that you like. Looking asking for specific issues that you care about and then reaching out to legislators on that issue. I'm telling you, people think we get overwhelmed when I was in the legislature, and you do get overwhelmed, but you get overwhelmed by junk. You get overwhelmed by spam emails from that all look exactly the same, and that is not influential at all. But when I got a call from a constituent who lived in my district, I would take that call and I would talk to them. So that's a great way to get involved. And then as you start to look to college and what you want to do, I studied political science, which I really enjoyed, and then went to law school after that. That's certainly not the only way. There are lots of better ways. By the way, we need lots of STEM graduates, so you can still actually do a hard.
Governor is cut out just a bit here, but you can see that he has some great advice for you, Stephen. Thank you so much for your call. The number to call with your questions, 801-575-8255. You can text us at 57500. We'll be right back.
Get your questions answered by the governor.
Call 801-575-8255
to join Let Me Speak to the Governor on KSL News Radio.
And thank you for spending the noon hour with us for Let Me Speak to the Governor. I'm Maria Chaleos, along with Utah Governor Spencer Cox, taking your calls and questions. And hopefully we can get through a lot of these, Governor. The next texter is a mother of three, concerned about the mask mandate ending before the end of the school year because her 14-year-old won't be fully protected until after the school year ends. And she's asking, why did you make the decision and on what science do you base that decision?
Sure. Thank you, Maria. So, look, this is, again, a personal choice. I would encourage her to if that's something that she's worried about, to have her kids wear a mask and to protect themselves. That's very important, and there's nothing that prevents anyone from doing that. So the idea behind this, we are in a low transmission phase. We continue to go down. Most of our counties are in low transmission now. We have many school districts that have had zero cases over the past several weeks, and that's the science that this was based on. And now again, we left it up to the individual school districts. So if school districts working with their local health departments, if they are seeing significant spread, they can absolutely still require those mask mandates. But we felt like this was a time during the last week in school. There's a lot less happening opportunities to be outside. We do have kids that are vaccinated. We have kids that have had the virus who have some level of immunity, and with such very low spread, we had requests from parents, again, especially of younger kids who wanted an opportunity to see the faces of their teachers and their friends. And so we decided that we would leave it up to everyone to decide what their comfort level was and whether or not they wanted to wear masks or not. And so that's what we're doing with our kids, and I would encourage everyone to do the same with their children.
Our next caller is Aaron in Lehigh, and good afternoon, Aaron. What is your question for the governor?
Hi, Governor. This is Aaron, and yesterday the legislature passed a resolution asking, the legislature to look into passing a Second Amendment sanctuary state bill. Like has been done in 12 other states. I know that's not something that you felt was a priority for the special session, and it's something that you criticized in some of the other states that have done it. If there was a bill that came up this next legislative session that would make us a Second Amendment sanctuary state and just not allow funds to be used to enforce federal firearms law that went beyond the scope of what we already have in our state, is that something that you would support and sign, or would you be opposed to it?
Yeah, thanks, Aaron, and thank you for the question. And let me be very clear, my position on the Second Amendment, on Second Amendment sanctuary states. So I'm very much a proponent of the Second Amendment. I signed the constitutional carry bill, something that hadn't been done for, it had been attempted but not done. I'm a defender. I believe that Utah is a constitutional sanctuary state and always has been, and will continue to be. I meet with the Attorney General regularly. The way when the federal government does something that we disagree with or something that we think is unconstitutional, the way we deal with that in our nation is that we take them to court. Since Marbury versus Madison back in 1803, the courts decide whether or not it's constitutional. By the way, they do the same thing with us. If we do something that's unconstitutional, the federal government will bring suit against the state. And so I want to make sure that we don't fight unconstitutional legislation with unconstitutional legislation. My reason for not putting it on the call wasn't that I'm opposed to it. It's that we don't – special sessions are very unique things. Trust me, you don't want a full-time legislature. Even if they do things you like, having a full-time legislature is the worst thing that could happen to us here in the state of Utah. There, it's good, it's healthy to give these things time so that we don't just, you know, every outrage that happens on cable news the next day, we're drafting bills. All that does is divide us more and more. This allows us time to be thoughtful about it, to get it right, to see what's working, what's not working, and to come to a better solution. And so we will push back on the Second Amendment or anything else that the federal government does that we believe is unconstitutional, and that includes the Second Amendment. And so I am open to it as we'll look at the bill and see what actually comes out. If it's something that I believe is constitutional and something that protects us from federal government overreach, then I will absolutely sign that bill.
All right. Thank you for your call. Governor, our next listener wants to know, when do you think kids under 12 will be vaccinated?
I don't know. That's a good question. The CDC and the FDA in particular will continue to do their research. They're very methodical about that. Vaccines, first of all, we need to make sure vaccines work, and they do. And these vaccines work as well or better than any vaccine that we've ever had. But two, we have to make sure that they're safe. And that's why we could have had these vaccines many months ago, but they have to go through those safety protocols. Otherwise, we can't trust them. And so that's what's been done. They took their time to go to the 12 to 15 year old range and went through the process and got it right. And now we're there. As I mentioned, my 14 year old daughter was able to get her first vaccine last week. And so we do not have a time frame on that. We've heard that it will probably be late summer or early fall potentially, but we just really don't know. And we'll have to wait and see how the tests go and the safety protocols go to make sure that they're still doing what they're supposed to do, that they're protecting our kids, and that they're safely doing so.
Just a couple of minutes left in the program. Let's take our last caller, and that is Nathan in Cottonwood Heights. Hi, Nathan. How can we help you today? Nathan, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Go ahead and ask your question.
Wondering what we can do about the lack of employees and labor in the state. I'm a general contractor, but I specialize in high-end residential landscapes, and I have ads everywhere with Indeed on KSL with the state with no luck. I mean, even the resumes that come in, they rarely show up for the interview, and the resumes are few and far between.
Nathan, thank you. This is an issue, and of course you're not alone in needing to find employees. So we made a decision last week that what we believe will certainly help in a big way. The step that we took last week was to we'll be ending the federal pandemic unemployment programs. Now we have to give a ramp to do that, and those will end the end of June. And our economy has rebounded better than any other state. We're at 2.9% unemployment, which is tied for the lowest in the nation. We'll be getting new numbers on that, I believe, tomorrow to see where we are with unemployment. So we're actually, if you remember, back in February of last year, our unemployment was at 2.7%. So we are right there where we were last year before the pandemic started, which is why we believe that it's time to roll back those. Now, unemployment is still there. It hasn't changed. It's the same requirement. requirements and the same benefits that have always been there. All we're doing is taking is ending, and they were set to end in September anyway, but because we're doing better than the rest of the nation, we felt that it was time to end those now. We believe that will have a big impact. Montana was the first state to do that, and they've seen a significant uptick in applications for jobs, and we're encouraging our labor force that may be discouraged to jump back into the workforce now and take advantage. We also have some awesome career opportunities. It's never been easier to upskill, to get additional education or certificates, whatever you need to be able to make more money. On jobs.utah.gov right now, there are more than 50,000 job postings, and on some of the private websites, we've seen upwards of 70,000 job postings. We have about 28,000 people on unemployment right now, and about 14,000 that will be losing benefits at the end of June. And so for those 14,000 that will be losing those benefits, I mean, there's upwards of 5 jobs available. In fact, Utah has, I think, the second highest ratio of jobs available to people who are on unemployment right now. And I will also point out that these aren't just minimum wage jobs. In fact, we have tens of thousands of jobs that pay $20 to $30 an hour or more than that. And so there are some really great opportunities out there for everyone. There may be those that are discouraged because they can't get a job back in the field that they once worked. And we would encourage you to broaden your search, consider other industries. There's certainly changing dynamics. And once government gets out of this and employers then are competing for those employees, then we will see wages go up. There's no question about that, and that's a good thing for an employee, but employers will have to look at that as they have to compete in the marketplace as well.
The governor is going to take some time to resolve. Thank you so much for your time today, taking all of the questions from our callers and texters, and we're leaving a lot of people hanging. They're just going to have to join us next month for Let Me Speak to the Governor.
Thanks, Maria. I can't wait to see you again soon.
Have a great day.
It's the story of an American held in a dark Venezuelan prison.
Then all of a sudden, they all kind of lined up. They pointed their guns at me. And this is the point where I thought, I'm going to die today.
I'm Becky Bruce. I spent a year working on Hope in Darkness, which now has more than 2 million downloads. Find it on KSLPodcast.com or wherever you listen to podcasts.